It is a pleasure to welcome back Arthur Schwartz after his couple-week absence with some time off, and I'm sure we'll hear about it now. Good morning, Arthur, and welcome back.
Good morning. Believe me, it's one of the best things about traveling. It's good to be home. Well, appreciate home more, which I knew when I set out. That was actually the main goal of this trip, was to appreciate home more, and it worked.
Well,
I went on the Queen Mary 2 to eventually Quebec and then back. Part of the charm of this was I enjoy, in general, the shipboard experience. And I've been on a lot of cruises as a speaker, as a cooking demonstrator, as a lure for other people to go on the trip. And I know that, for me, the best cruises are the ones that go to places you don't care about, so that you get the shipboard experience and you don't have to feel bad about only spending 6 hours in Barcelona. That's always my example. I mean, I did that, and of course, the next year I had to go back and spend a week in Barcelona. I like to go to places and stay and really get the flavor. You know, in one day out and a lunch in a place. And this trip went to eventually Quebec, and we stayed 2.5 days in Quebec, and I do love Quebec. I've been there, several times at least. And I ate extremely well in Quebec, as I knew I would, although I didn't get to eat the thing I wanted to eat. I'll tell you that in a second. But the other ports were, the only place was Halifax. Not that I got to see Halifax, but it looks like a really nice town, probably better to live in than to visit. There's not much to see as a tourist. It's there on the ocean, so it's a port town. There's a nice walkway on the water. But in fact, before I left, I said one of my main goals is some of these ports is to get off, take a walk, eat a lobster roll, and get back on the ship. And that's what I did in Halifax. And another place was Saguenay. I got off the ship in Saguenay because it didn't have to get on another boat to get to the port. These are called tenders. Every cruise ship and ocean liner, I don't know the difference. Maybe somebody can tell me.
Of what?
Have these tenders, which are small boats that they let down when they get to a port where you can't actually just get off the ship and onto land.
I can tell you why.
Excuse me, are you talking to me?
Yes.
You talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
I didn't hear you.
Did you want to know why that happened?
No. Why does that happen?
No. I thought you said you had a question on that. That's all. It's the only reason I...
No question. Yeah. But Saguenay is... it's actually a cluster of towns at the end of the Saguenay Fjord. It's pretty it's like I say about the Panama Canal. It's nice for 15 minutes, but it takes all day to get there. So, how many banks of evergreen trees can you look at?
As many as you want.
You know, I lived in Cornwall. I had no dearth of evergreen trees.
Arthur, when you say that, God bless her, she's no longer with us. My mother, when she had advanced Alzheimer's, onset dementia, whatever, she tried to check herself out of the residential place she was living in. Uh-huh. And so I went to her and I said, Mom, what are you doing? They called me and I went there at night. I said, what are you doing here in the lobby? She said, I want to get off the ship. I said, Mom, this isn't a ship. I says, have you ever been in a ship that's surrounded by trees? And she looked at me and she said, the Panama Canal.
I'm sorry, I missed the punchline.
She said to me after I said to her, Mom, how can this be a ship? There's trees on both sides. She said, it could be in the Panama Canal.
Well, she was right.
Yes.
So I did the Panama Canal years ago. Any case... So the shipboard experience here, I this is my second time on this ship. I went transatlantic on it nearly 5 years ago. Is it 5 years ago? Yeah, I think it's nearly 5 years ago. And I was disappointed in that, but it was super cheap at the time. I was able to go for the same price I would economy plus on Alitalia to Rome. Don't ask. It was not a good idea because in the end it took way longer than I thought. But in any case, I was disappointed then. So I figured, how could I be disappointed a second time? You know, I know what to expect. But I don't think it's as nice as it was even 5 years ago. And the food was, and not just in my opinion, I am super picky, I know, but other people had similar reactions to me. I was sitting next to this a Scotsman in the theater at the end of the trip, and I said, well, what do you think? I've eaten extremely well in Scotland, I have to add. So I said, what do you think of the food? And he just looked at me and said, bland. Other people had more critical responses. My problem, you know, I figured it out by the last day or two or three, what you could eat and what you couldn't count on. And one of the things main things you could not count on the Queen Mary 2 is the beef. Lamb, I had good luck with lamb. The last night out, we had a very nice piece of roast veal. I was surprised at how good it was, truthfully. The selling point in that one was polenta, and the polenta was delicious. So it came also with a sauté of wild mushrooms and fava beans in ubiquitous brown gravy on the Queen Mary 2. So one day, you know, the waiters knew nothing, even though I once walked through the dining room and caught the briefing for the dinner, which is the maitre d' tells the captains and maybe not the waiters what the menu is. But if you ask a question, nobody knows the answer. So the first, my first steak, and I was, by the way, intending to sort of be on a diet on the ship because I figured, well, I'm going to get good fish and a good meat, and I can just do salads and vegetables and. But the vegetables were exactly the same every day. Their idea of seasonal vegetables was half-cooked cauliflower, half-cooked broccoli, and half-cooked string beans and carrots day after day. And the meat was inedible. My first steak I ordered medium rare. It came out well done. I sent it back. I think to insult me, they sent out a literally cold steak that had barely touched heat. So couldn't even cut that one, much less chew it. So that was that. And I don't know, hope, what's the expression? Hope
springs eternal.
Springs eternal. I ordered a tenderloin one night, and it was, besides tasteless, it was hard to cut also. Somebody told me, one of the Brits, very impressed, said, oh, you know, the beef comes from Colorado. You know, I think beef from Aberdeen is vastly superior at Brit beef, actually. I must say the best steak I ever ate was in Aberdeen. It was Aberdeen Angus in Ireland. I'm sorry, in
Scotland.
And the second best steak I ever ate was in Ireland, where their meat is all grass-fed, not necessarily always my favorite, but the grass in Ireland must be terrific. Anyway, I did learn quickly that the best dish on the menu, and it came up three times, so I ordered it, was something called a liver berlinoise, so from Berlin. And I asked the waiter the first time it came around, like, what is berlinoise? And he said, brown sauce. So I ordered it anyway, because it also came with mashed potatoes, which by then we knew were pretty good. If sometimes oversalted, but that's okay. Anyway, I get this plate, and it's a sauce. And by the way, I was very stern that night, and I said, make sure that liver is pink. He said, rare? I said, no, pink, not rare, medium. So I got it the way I wanted, and it came with a slice of, and I'm going to forget what this is called, but to me it's a slice of, a very thin slice of griddled ham. To the Brits, it's some kind of bacon from some place in England. I forget where. That was good. That goes with liver. I thought, well, maybe I prefer American bacon, but no, this was good. And crisped onions, and also sautéed onions, two kinds of onions. So what could be bad? I looked up berlinoise just this morning because I was a zombie yesterday and couldn't even turn on the computer. And I find Bear Lanoise, but it's not what I got. Although I would happily eat the real Bear Lanoise, which is with apples, onions, and bacon. Sautéed apples and onions and crisp bacon. Doesn't that sound good? Well, if you like liver.
We learn
quickly. Now, I was going to abandon desserts while on board and eat only fresh fruit. And they did have watery watermelon. And somebody said, I think this had to have been frozen. Why else would it be this watery? And good cantaloupe and honeydew. And occasionally you saw a grape. You could always get an apple and a banana or a banana. But the desserts were really great. I think the pastry here, I mean, it's so English, right, that the best thing would be the pastry. And you could eat pastry three times a day on this ship. There was tea in the afternoon, and you get, you know, little tea sandwiches, sometimes good, sometimes not so good, and very good pastries and puddings, as the Brits call it. So speaking of pudding, there were some English dishes on the menu. For instance, steak and mushroom suet pudding. Sounds pretty awful, doesn't it?
Well, unless you read books of the...
Pardon me?
I said, unless you read books of a certain era, it sounds disgusting.
Okay. But, well, I had no idea what the difference between this and a lamb and kidney pie, for instance. This was supposed to be... this was actually beef. Absolutely delicious beef. Melt-in-your-mouth chunks of stew meat in a very dark brown sauce. Made with Guinness beer, with porter, which is dark. Any porter will do. Any porter in a storm. So, and nice little edge of thyme, carrots. It was very good. I did not detect a mushroom in my serving, and the people I was sitting with at dinner didn't detect, English people, did not, she did not detect any beef in hers, and he did not detect any mushrooms in his. So, I, you know, with a little consistency problem. But the actual steamed outer portion of the pudding, which is, in fact, ground-up suet, beef fat, with flour and some seasoning, and pressed into to make some pastry, it's pressed into a form, and then you fill it with this stew. And I think my neighbor said it's usually baked upside down, but I haven't yet found an upside down recipe. In any case, it came out upside down, and I thought it was a really good thing to eat in the pub, not in the dining room. They served this daily for lunch in the pub. I didn't order it a second time because I really didn't want to be disappointed, and I had a very good example, apparently. The other thing... I left on this trip craving kidneys because I like kidneys, and I haven't had kidneys in a long time, and I don't know anybody. I know one other person who will eat kidneys with me, and I'm not sure I want to sit at the table with him for an hour or more. I'm not sure I want. Anyway, that's not the point. So I have, you know, it just dawned on me. I have another friend, my friend Harry. He loves kidneys. In fact, I remember we once went away with Harry and Fran, and Harry cooked kidneys on toast for breakfast. His attempt at being Uber Wasp from Greenwich, Connecticut, of Mayflower descent. I discovered that culturally, that's the kidney population. So, but I know I was watching there's a show called Cook Like a Chef or something like that. It's on one of these off cable stations, and I only recently got it. It used to be blanked out, but now I'm actually getting it, and I really like it because it makes me more optimistic about young chefs, because most of these chefs are young, and they're cooking food that I would want to make. Somebody is choosing the recipes very well. And one of them made the sautéed kidneys the way I used to make them when I made them, which was this classic French way with mustard and cream. And I discover, looking around, that mustard is a very typical... oh, by the way, mustard and cream and cognac. You glaze the pan with cognac in the French method. Or even nicer, maybe, would be the apple spirit.
Calvados?
Calvados, thank you.
I'm doing my job this morning.
So that got me a craving for kidneys, and I thought for sure I was going to find them on the ship. But the Queen Mary II was not brave enough to serve their steak and kidney with kidneys. It's steak and mushroom. And then sitting next to this very, very delightful British couple at dinner, it ends up, they're both retired. She does videos, which is very interesting, another story. And he plays golf, and he cooks. She doesn't like to cook anymore. He likes it, so he does it, which is, I have found a very typical situation, especially among guys who like to eat well. And Ian unquestionably likes to eat well. So Ian does most of the cooking, but Jillian shared with me the kidney recipe that she makes that they both love. They were like swooning over this. So now I'm dying to eat this, but I've decided that I really have to find somebody, because even one kidney, one veal kidney, is more than enough for two people. So I have to find some kidney lovers. So in this kidney, if you do like kidneys, this is super easy. You can, let me just say, I've only cooked kidneys by soaking them first. And so I would take the whole kidney and put it in, cover it with milk and let it soak overnight, at least, in the refrigerator. Because kidneys can have a very overpowering smell and hence flavor, and you want to like making salt cod, you know, you want to diminish that aspect. So soak it overnight in milk, and then the next day cut it into pieces, but discard the hard core. You're going to find that in the middle of the kidneys, the many lobes of kidney, there is a hard core that you don't want to eat. So discard that. You can slice the kidneys. You can cut them into pieces. I think you don't want to leave them whole. Then heat some butter and oil together. I would say, for one whole kidney, you're going to need at least 2 tablespoons of butter and a tablespoon of oil. And blot the kidneys well so that they're dry when you put them in the pan. And sauté them until they're nice and brown on all sides. Take them out of the pan. Deglaze the pan with some chicken broth or beef broth, either way. And then you can thicken it. Well, you know, there are two ways to do thickening. You do want to use thickening. You can either toss the kidneys in flour before browning them, or add the flour to the skillet once the kidneys are done and cook that fat and flour together to make a roux for just a couple minutes and then add your chicken broth. The other possibility is that once you've got a little sauce here, you can thicken it up with cornstarch and, you know, dilute it in a little water. You can play with this. I have not made this yet. This is just in my dreams and directions according to Jillian. Anyway... Of course, by the way, you want to salt and pepper the kidneys before sautéing them. And then the sauces. So now you've deglazed the pan with some broth, and you add a mixture of, and I'm thinking that this is for about 1 cup of broth that you put in the pan, 1 tablespoon of prepared Coleman's mustard, not the dry mustard, but the paste one, and 1 tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce, and 1 teaspoon of curry powder, just commercial curry powder. Mix those 3 things together, add them to your reducing chicken broth, then that is your sauce. And if you need to adjust the sauce by adding a little bit more liquid, you do, blah, blah. Add the kidneys back in, and you serve it over rice. So I hope kidney lovers... mouths are watering.
And if not, you can, again, if you're not a kidney lover, can't you just do that same thing with, for example, mushrooms or something?
Well, it's not going to be the same, but thinking is that it's a good source for liver.
Okay, but if you...
Although the people who don't eat kidneys probably don't eat liver.
There you go. So if you're...
I used to hate liver, and I still, except for exactly what you said, my grandmother could dress up the liver so I would eat it, and also liver dumpling soup I liked. I don't know why.
There used to be people who would say that they would eat their...
I didn't like liver until my mother started making sweet and sour... a sweet and sour sauce for liver, which has been lost to history.
There are people who have been known.
So the other thing is, I must say, you know, the desserts, as I said, were really, really good, and of course, quite elegant. You know, QE2. I don't mean QE2. Queen Mary. By the way, I went on the QE2 over 35 years ago. Anyway, and that was even worse food than on the Queen Mary 2. But I noticed that a lot of people didn't care. As I always say, the most disheartening thing in my life is watching people enjoy bad food. So, but then there was a sizable number that agreed with me. I mean, it came up in conversation. I have to say, especially from Americans who rolled their eyes at the food.
How big of a table do they sit you at now?
Well, anywhere from 2 to 8.
Okay, because when I went twice on the QE2 as a tour leader, I had 12 people. There were 12 people at our tables.
No, they don't do that. I didn't see any tables for 12, but a lot of people were too. It's a very class organization. There's people who eat in the Britannia, which is this very, very large restaurant. Very beautiful, might add, in subdued colors, so you know, it's not too glitzy. And then there was the Princess Grill,
yes,
and the Queen's Grill. And only if you have the ultra, ultra expensive penthouse suites, you get to eat in the Queen's Grill. And I don't know, you have to be pretty high up there to get into the Princess Grill. But if you're in the Britannia, you have a 6 o'clock seating and an 8-something seating. And even though I don't like to eat as early as 6, we wanted to see the entertainment, which you don't get to see until 10:45 if you're at the late seating. So that was too late for me to even keep my eyes open.
So the entertainment, there are two shots at the entertainment?
There are two shows of the entertainment for the early seating people and for the late seating people.
That's hard work.
I mean, it's an enormous ship. It's almost 3,000 people.
Right.
Do
they have two different casts for it, or do they do the same cast?
What do you mean cast?
For the entertainment. Whatever the entertainment is, do they?
No. It's the same exact entertainment.
Yeah. No, it's
which
it's
most of the time was engaging, if sometimes annoying.
Yeah.
And in one case with an acrobat, totally boring. And we walked out of that one not because he was boring. We didn't even wait to see his partner come on stage. It was so boring we couldn't. But it was the lighting was so bad. It was flashing in our eyes, and that was not good. We're not epileptic. So, by the way, they do tell you before every performance that this might set you off if you're an epileptic.
That is something. So, I just have to say that is something that the BBC has done since the beginning of time, and it to this day on their website, caution: flash photography may cause caution.
Well, I knew this. I know this from a friend who I hope she still is epileptic, better than the alternative. I haven't seen her in many, many years, but back then we were pretty close, and she was epileptic. So I go to this restaurant, which for the life of me, I can't remember the name, but I'm going to call a couple people today because it's bothering me that I can't think of it. But it was opened by the son of a famous chef who had made his name in Brazil, in Rio. So, of course, this restaurant was super glitzy, in Rio style, and the upstairs was lit with candles. It was like a mezzanine looking over the main dining room, which I think to some people was an advantage and a good seat. but not to me, because all the noise from downstairs, and it was plenty noisy, was going upstairs, and the candles really bothered me. So when I got to this table, I said to the captain, maitre d', whoever seated me, I can't sit at this table between the noise and the flashing candlelight. And he said, well, this is the only table we have tonight. And I said, well, unless you want me to go into an epileptic fit from the candles, you'd better reseat me. And he looked at me like, oh, my God. Are we liable for this?
Right this way, sir.
It's like, yikes.
So they did. They did. Right. They put us downstairs, which wasn't any more pleasant, truthfully. But I didn't set off my epileptic fit.
No. I love listening to your stories.
But anyway, the QE2 was a great people experience. We met lots and lots of nice people. Our accommodations were very comfortable. The bed was very comfortable. As I said, the watermelon was watery. And I guess that's my synopsis.
I love hearing your Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth stories, because I was on those ships twice as a tour leader, and I got to eat in the middle. I had to wear a tuxedo every night to dinner. But it was so the whole experience was terrific, because as a tour leader, they really treat you like a king. They really do.
Well, or the opposite. I have to say, you. This is quite a while ago. we bonded with a priest, with the ship's chaplain, whose name is Thomas Kane. He's Father Thomas Kane, and he was, as the chaplain, he said, "Oh, I'm fortunate that they gave me a porthole this time." they usually give him the worst room, and the ship was full. The ship was totally booked. Right. By the way, I was concerned that the children's pool was outside my room, but then the good part was I could go swimming every morning. Well, the weather was not up to swimming every morning; could never get into that pool, and there was not a child. Well, there were 9 children on board, but I would say the average age was more like 75. I felt young this ship.
This is good.
Like I said, I love hearing these stories, because I made friends with all the crew and stuff, and I would go out in the islands and I'd spend all night with them and come back, and so the crew treated me like...
But you were memorable.
Well, the only time we saw our steward was when we were leaving, and he stood outside our room, I think for a handout. But you know what? Service charges were added to our bill, so I didn't. And as I had never seen him except when we arrived and when we left, I didn't feel the need to tip him further.
One day.
Anyway, very happy to be home. Brooklyn looks gorgeous. Being very happy to cook my own food today. I'm going to go shopping. And I've decided not to make kidneys, but I am in search of a restaurant that serves good kidneys. And maybe next week I'll have that for you.
All right. Welcome back. Love to Bob.
Thank you. Take care. You too.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.